Hello, and welcome to the January 30th, 2024 episode of the musical universe of Professor Hurst. This is Craig W. Hurst, Emeritus Professor of Music, podcasting from my music bunker, along with my faithful canine companion, Carmel the Wonder Dog, to share with you my latest musical interests and discoveries. I claim no special inside information about the latest or greatest music, nor do I know everything there is to know about music. What I am is a lover of music. I enjoy several genres of music, and I share with you what has currently caught my interest, old, new, outdated, and everything in between. Even old music is brand new if you have never heard it before. The universe of music is a vast one to enjoy. From my discussions, you might find something new to you and of interest to expand your own musical universe. I currently receive no compensation or motivation of any kind from any recording label, recording artist, or the estate of any performer or composer dead and gone to discuss their music and or recordings. Now with that out of the way, welcome to my musical universe. My guest today is Americana singer-songwriter Charlotte Morris. Growing up outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Charlotte Morris discovered her passion for music at a young age. "I've been playing instruments since I could walk and singing since I could talk," the singer-songwriter explains. As a child, her parents would take her to classical concerts and musical theater productions, igniting a fire inside of young Charlotte's soul. Every family car ride was filled with folk classics, musical theater or classical music, Joni Mitchell, Judy Collins, Simon and Garfunkel, and Peter, Paul, and Mary were all the soundtracks of my childhood. After starting violin lessons at the age of 4, Charlotte taught herself how to play the guitar, piano, and melodica, ukulele, banjo, acoustic bass guitar, and mandolin, and began taking her songwriting seriously by the age of 12. "Music grew from something I loved to something I needed." That sounds wildly dramatic, I know, but before then, I had never felt able to fully express myself. Describing her unique style as genuine, raw, and emotional music with a purpose, Charlotte takes inspiration from female storytelling artists like Brandi Carlile, Sarah Bareilles, Kelsey Ballerini, Maren Morris, and the Chicks, as well as style inspiration from bands like Delta Ray and Fleetwood Mac. These artists have really shown me that I don't need to fit into a box. Everything I write is about my life. My lyrics are extremely personal and paint a very detailed picture about things I, and those I love, have experienced. In January of 2018, Charlotte joined Lonesome Traveler, a concert tour where the cast performed the history of folk music, starting with Woody Guthrie and ending with the songs by the likes of Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, and Joan Baez. While on the road, folk legends including Tom Chapin, George Grove of the Kingston Trio, Peter Yarrow, and Paul Stuckey, both of Peter, Paul, and Mary, performed with the cast at various venues. Charlotte released her debut extended play, To New York with Love, in June of 2018, which received positive recognition from newspapers, music blogs, and playlists worldwide. She paired the release with a kickoff performance at New York's famed 54 Below and began playing her original music at venues across the city. After her debut success, Charlotte released a number of singles, as well as a 5-song extended play produced by Nashville-based Mitch Dane, entitled Sputnik. In the spring of 2019, Charlotte embarked on her first fully acoustic tour, performing in over 15 different cities across the United States, including Nashville, Austin, and Baltimore. Charlotte released her first full-length album, Songs for My Next Ex, in December of 2020. The 8-part story album takes the listener through the highs and lows of a tumultuous yet transformative relationship. The album received rave reviews from both national and international press. It was after this release that Charlotte decided to move out of New York City and become an official Music City resident. Since moving to Nashville in 2021, Charlotte has established herself in the industry as an artist on the rise. In spring of 2021, she was selected as one of only 16 songwriters to participate in the Johnny Mercer Foundation's Songwriters Project. During the project, she was mentored by world-class writers including Lindy Robbins and Tony and Grammy Awards nominee Andrew Lippa. Alongside Charlotte Avenue Entertainment, Charlotte released Good Kind of Hurt, a deeply personal song about addiction and post-traumatic stress disorder, in June of 2022, with the hope of spurring more conversation around the difficulties and misunderstandings of mental illness. She followed up that success with her nostalgia-filled, folk-driven single, Tennessee, and most recently, Charlotte released Your Number One, a driving song of empowerment that's sure to take over summer playlists everywhere. With a full album released in the fall of 2023, Charlotte's career in this industry is just beginning. Charlotte majored in theater with minors in musical theater, business, and marketing at Northwestern University. After graduating, she performed in theatrical productions and tours around New York City and across the nation before moving to Nashville. Theatrical highlights include the making of How to Save the World in 90 Minutes off-Broadway, Lonesome Traveler, the national tour, and Once, multiple productions. When the singer-songwriter is not writing or releasing music, she works in the fintech industry, travels across the country in her converted van, and is an avid crossword puzzler. It is my pleasure to welcome to my musical universe, Charlotte Morris. Hello, Charlotte.
Hi.
It's really great to talk with you. And it's really a lot of fun to have you as a guest on my show today. And I'm looking forward to learning more about you and about your music on behalf of my audience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a great way to kick off the new year.
Yes, it is. I want to strike while the iron's hot, get right to it. In September of 2023, you released an album entitled Wild Child. Now, according to my Spotify feed, Good Kind of Hurt, Tennessee, and Your Number One are the songs that seem to be getting the most streams, the most, I called it airplay, but it's not really airplay, I guess, since it's not radio play, but Spotify, internet play, I guess we'd say. So would you talk about each of these three songs and others from the album, if you'd like to? Tell us about their inspiration, How they're musically put together, any particular decisions that were made regarding instrumentation, and then maybe why do you think those songs are resonating as well as they are with listeners?
Totally. Well, those are you said radio play as of, or internet play as opposed to airplay, but those are actually the three songs that are doing best on radio as well. So it kind of seems to be a recurring theme. But yeah, happy to dive into those three. I guess I'll start with Good Kind of Hurt. And I think right off the bat, both of those three songs are the three that we released and promoted as singles leading up the album. So I definitely think that that has, that plays a part in why the streams and airplay and things like that are higher, because we did really focus on them. We released music videos for them and really tried to get them out to as many people as possible, which I think has succeeded. But starting with Good Kind of Hurt, this is a song that I wrote in, I guess it was 2021. I had just moved here to Nashville. And I wrote it as a part of a songwriter's workshop that I did called the Johnny Mercer Songwriters Project, which is this really special week-long project where they bring together anywhere from like 12 to 15 songwriters of all different genres. You apply the year before, and basically you spend the week collaborating, writing, sharing your songs, and getting feedback from the mentors, and really just focus, like spending dedicated time writing, which at least for me is something I kind of struggle to do, especially when on my busier days, I struggle to really set aside that designated time to write. And I wrote Good Kind of Hurt during that process, about the struggle that my stepfather has gone through with alcoholism and his fight to find sobriety, and kind of how addiction has affected him, has affected our family, and the kind of misunderstanding I think that society still has for things like addiction. Because I hear so many people say, like, oh, well, why doesn't that celebrity just stop? Like, just stop taking drugs, just stop drinking, And it's really not simple like that. It's a mental health issue. You can't just decide, I'm going to stop this and do it with ease. It really is a constant everyday battle to overcome addiction. And anyways, so I wrote Good Kind of Hurt about the experience that my family has gone through with that, and especially that my stepdad has gone through, and really wrote it in hopes of starting more conversations about the topic and spreading more awareness of the fact that it is a disease. And I think that has really sat, I think that's one of the things that's landed it so well with listeners, because there are so many people struggling with addiction, whether publicly or privately, or they have family or friends that struggle with it. And it's really quite common. And I think that has landed that song home. And has hopefully had a positive impact on folks and made them feel seen. So that was Good Kind of Hurt. And one of the fun, kind of like fun facts of the recording process for that one is that the vocal that you hear me singing in the track was actually the scratch vocal that we did on the first day we were in the studio with the band. And for anybody who's not familiar with the recording process, everybody does it differently, but the way that a lot of people tend to do it, especially individual singers as opposed to like full band entities, is they'll lay down a kind of like a draft vocal so that the band, as they go through, have something to hear. But then the singer will go back into the studio the next day or a week later, whenever it makes sense, and they will re-record the vocal. They'll be able to do it as many times as they want without making the band also do it that many times, and kind of be able to perfect it. So the scratch vocal that we did for Good Kind of Hurt on that first day, we loved it so much. And it felt so apt for the song and so authentic to the emotions of the song that that's actually what we ended up using, which is pretty rare. And I definitely have some scratch vocals out there that I would not want to be the main vocal of the track, but that one turned out to be exactly what we needed for it. So that's Good Kind of Hurt. The second single that we released off of the album in preparation for the full album was Tennessee. And this is another song that I wrote not during the program, not during the Johnny Mercer Songwriters program, but around the same time. I moved to Nashville spring of 2021. And this was a it was a very interesting time because I had basically been I'd been in total lockdown for the last year. When COVID hit, I had been living in New York City and I stuck around for a little bit, hoping that, oh, it'll pass. It'll only be a week or 2 weeks or whatever we all thought it was going to be at the time. And eventually I started going a little bit crazy and so went home to stay with my mom and stepdad outside of Philadelphia and thought that I was going to be there for a couple of weeks, ended up being there for about 10 months. And so at the beginning of 2021, I was like, I need to get out of here. I've been here long enough. I love my family, but it and I'm really grateful for the time I had with them, which is unexpected as an adult, but I needed to figure out what I was going to do. I didn't want to go back to New York, and Nashville had kind of always been on my like 10-year plan. I was like, at some point I'll move to Nashville. It's not going to be now, but at some point it'll make sense. And COVID kind of accelerated all of that. And so yeah, spring of 2021, I moved down to Nashville. And it was a total whirlwind because everybody was kind of coming out of hibernation and everybody was so excited just to like be with other people that that summer was kind of like I've compared it a lot to like summer camp. Like everybody was wanting to do activities and like go to the lake and go out and like make friends and feel like everybody was in a pretty similar spot. There was a lot of people who had either just moved or a lot of their friends had moved away. And so I think it's a pretty unique position to be in as an adult where everybody is looking to like make a new friend. And I feel like making friends as an adult is hard a lot of times, but everybody was in the same position. And so that summer was just like not real, honestly. It was like it was not reality. And I wrote Tennessee as I was kind of getting to the end of that summer, and the rose-colored glasses were coming off a little bit. I remembered that I was an adult and had responsibilities, and I was not going to be able to kind of live in this space forever. And that's where where Tennessee came from, because it's kind of this. When I listen to it, I feel very nostalgic because it's not, to me, it has an air of like, this is something that I loved and had so much fun doing and just like so appreciated, but it's not a place that I want to be in forever. Like I want to move away from that. I want to grow up. I want to do the next thing. And it's that thing that you always look at with a really like you think about it and you smile, but it's not a place that you would want to be in forever. I feel like a lot of people feel that way about relationships, friendships, jobs. Like they look back at them with such appreciation, but they recognize that it was the right thing for them to kind of move on from. And that summer is, it was a lot of fun, but it was not going to be something I should be in forever. And that's kind of how Tennessee came out of that. And the song, I think, is when you listen to the album at like if you're listening top to bottom, it's one of the more, I would say, kind of country tracks on the album. I would define myself as like Americana folk, but There are definitely strains of country, and Tennessee, I think, given the name, given the fact I talk about Nashville, and then of course the style of the music really does lean a little bit more country. And I think that especially in Nashville and when I'm performing around the South, kind of, you know, it finds a special place into people's hearts. People love to hear their hometowns, their home states talked about with love and appreciation. And I think that's part of the reason why Tennessee specifically has kind of found some good following. And I also think when I think about Tennessee, the reason I love the song so much and love to perform it so much is because it finds a part of my voice that I hadn't really used a lot before moving to Tennessee. Some additional background about myself, as I went to school for musical theater. And when I was living in New York, I was actively auditioning and doing theater while also writing music and doing my own music. So I was kind of splitting my time and splitting my energy between musical theater and whatever I was writing, whatever genre that was, whatever I was kind of feeling. And because so much of my focus was in theater, I was using my voice in a way that would best work with theater, which I think, like in retrospect, is very different than where my voice most comfortably sits on any given day. And so by the time I moved to Nashville, I hadn't been, aside from like some virtual things, I hadn't been performing for about a year. My voice was allowed a chance to kind of reset and grow and kind of find its comfort zone. And that's what I found in the song Tennessee, is that I was all of a sudden able to do this high flowing tight vibrato kind of soprano bit where I flip up from my chest voice into my head voice, which is something I had used before. I did a lot of folk shows when I was in New York, and I had sung a lot of Joni Mitchell and a lot of Judy Collins. And so I did use that part of my voice, but never so, it always felt a little bit strained almost. Like I never felt exactly, I never felt like it was like perfect when I was doing it. And then once I gave my voice a chance to reset a bit, that's exactly what I found. And I think Tennessee really puts that on display. And I love singing that song, like for that reason.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and not that I want to get too divergent from talking about your songs, but you've raised some what I think are interesting questions that I have. I'm not a vocalist per se. Well, I guess you could say I sing, but I don't know that anyone else would think I'm singing. But I do know enough to know that that when we talk about singing styles, we're not just talking about the style of the music. We're actually talking about the style of the voice. So, for example, a New York musical theater voice is very different from an Americana folk type sound versus a metropolitan opera voice. I mean, all of those are very different. I mean, just as sort of screaming vocals of heavy metal rock are very different, you know. And so when you talk about, I guess I'm bringing this up for the benefit of my listeners who might be not be as well attuned, but there's different kinds of voices that you use in different styles. Because if you sang Tennessee in the same kind of voice that you were singing when you were doing musical theater, people would go, that's wrong, or something doesn't sound right. I think they would. You know, and I mean, I've conducted enough pit orchestras, you know, for musicals to kind of understand how that difference happens. And so I think that's a good thing to bring up, that your move to Tennessee, and not only was a shift for you geographically, but it was a shift for you physically in terms of the way you were using your voice, and a shift in terms of musical style. I mean, it sounds like it was a big change for you in your personal and performing life. The other question I have, and then we can get back to talking about, we'll get back and talk about your number one. When you bring up about these songwriter workshops, I've had, you know, I haven't even thought to ask about this before. You're not the first singer-songwriter that I've interviewed that has mentioned going to songwriter workshops. Now, when you say this was Johnny, is this a Johnny Mercer Foundation that sponsors these, or?
Yes, yes.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so Johnny Mercer, again, for anybody who's not familiar, Johnny Mercer was a brilliant songwriter and performer in his own right. And if you go and look it up, there's definitely a lot of songs that I would expect almost every listener of this to recognize. He wrote some absolute classics that you won't even know were his. But yeah, so there's now the Johnny Mercer Foundation, and they do quite a lot of things and kind of contribute his money and royalties to many different projects. And one of them is the Johnny Mercer Songwriters Project, specifically meant to foster and educate, you know, songwriters of the current generation. And so the songwriters, the Johnny Mercer Songwriters Project specifically, you have to be between the ages of, I think it's 18 and 30, or maybe it's 18 and 32, or I don't know, something along those lines, but explicitly for younger writers who are figuring things out, finding their voices. It's a great chance to collaborate and network. And unlike many other songwriters workshops, Johnny Mercer, the Johnny Mercer Songwriters Project is completely free to the writers. It's covered completely by the foundation. And then you're also given a stipend throughout it to then create like a final end project and presentation that happens at the end. And typically the workshop takes place in person outside of Chicago on Northwestern's campus, because the Johnny Mercer Foundation is very active with Northwestern. They do a number of programs with the students throughout the year. So typically the workshop takes place like June of every year on campus after the students have left. But my year, because it was 2021 and it was still coming out of COVID, we were completely virtual, which in some ways was awesome because that meant that I could like do it all from the comfort of my own home. I didn't have to, you know, figure out any conflicts with kind of like the day job that I was working and the program. Like I could just be at home and juggle things. But simultaneously, like that meant that I didn't get to actually meet anybody in person. And so there was actually one of the women who was in the program with me. We became really good friends over the course of that week. And I didn't meet her in person for the first time until like 3 months ago. She came to Nashville and she stayed with me, and she she was doing a different workshop actually and doing some shows and whatnot. But that was the first time we had met in person after feeling like I felt like I had met her so many times because we'd, you know, known each other for almost 2 years at that point, or more than 2 years at that point. And anyways, so all that to say is yeah, it was a great experience, but there's a lot of workshops that provide really amazing opportunities for writers to just find designated time to write, to meet other writers. I would say that the one tough thing is that most of the workshops that you'll kind of like find online, you do have to pay to be a part of them, and some of them get pretty pricey. And also because they are, you know, paid workshops, there's not as much of a review process of who is trying to sign up. There's always some sort of application or some sort of kind of submission process where you talk about your writing and you show some of your work. But the bar is not bar. I mean, that sounds they're just more open. Kind of all levels of writers and all levels of experience. Whereas Johnny Mercer has a very, you know, they get thousands of applications and they go through all of them and narrow them down to, you know, about 12 people. And so you know that you're writing with folks who have some really amazing talent, which is awesome. And you're getting to collaborate and learn from these folks.
Well, you know,
the whole range of them.
I guess what I hear and what encourages me is that, okay, I mean, we can be open. I mean, songwriting is a commercial entity, but it's also an art form.
Absolutely.
And a craft. And it's wonderful to know that we, you know, this foundation and others like it are functioning as a way to help foster the art of songwriting.
Yes.
Because there certainly is an art to it. And so I was just kind of curious because I know I'd had some of the other people I've interviewed talk about various writer workshops. And then I've got a third question that's corollary to it. And then being in Nashville, you are in a wonderful environment because there are probably many, 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 many very talented people in that town.
Yeah.
And so I would assume that although it can probably be very competitive, I imagine there's also a lot of sympathetic support that you get from other artists in the field. And that must be a nice environment to be in.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I decided that I wanted to move to Nashville at some point in time. The first time that I came down to Nashville was in, what was it, 2018. I came down here to work with a producer on my EP Sputnik, which is out everywhere. Wherever you listen to music, you can find it. But I worked with Mitch Dane at Sputnik Sound Studios here in Nashville to do that EP. And I'd never been to Nashville before. I had honestly never really even thought about it. Like, I mean, I knew, I think if you had asked me then, like I would have been able to, I knew that it was a great space for musicians and that there was so much music, but hadn't really thought of it beyond that. And one of the very first things I noticed when I came down here is that everybody is so like welcoming and collaborative and willing to chat and talk about their own experiences. And so even though there are so many incredibly talented musicians in this, musicians and songwriters and singers in this city, all kind of going for the same thing. I mean, give or take, you know, there's lots of different ways you can define success, especially in the music industry. And so everybody has their own goal of what that looks like for them. But in terms of how many people are going to get signed to a label or signed with a manager or get a song on a Spotify playlist, like, you know, there are limited spots for those things. And so you're like, you're so right that everybody is technically competing with each other. But nobody acts like that, like at all. Like everybody is just so happy to meet another songwriter. Everybody is like, oh my gosh, I loved that song that you played. Like, we should find a time to write together. Or like, I'd love to pick your brain about X, Y, and Z because I saw that you worked with so-and-so over at that. Like everybody just is so friendly and there's such a sense of community, which is something that when I was in New York, I had so much community in theater because I had gone to school for theater. All of my friends from school had also moved to New York. And then when you're in the audition processes for theater, like you meet everybody, you're in a room together pretty much all day. And so there's a huge community. But when I was doing, like when I was performing around New York with my music, it was so isolating. Like nobody wanted to talk. Nobody wanted to like give any sort of advice because maybe that would give you a leg up that they felt like they had over you. Or I don't even know. But it was really, it was pretty lonely. And so when I came here within like the first day, it was so clear that Nashville was such a different community. It was such a different vibe. And it's really amazing. It's really amazing to have. And yeah.
Well, I kind of get the, you know, I get the impression. I mean, you're also not the first Nashville-based artist that I've talked to. And I've gotten a real education about Nashville because I had some preconceived, you know, notions that it was all cowboy boots and country music, and it, and it's not. I mean, there's lots of different kinds of music being made in Nashville. And, what I gather from talking with these various people is that, like I said, there's a lot of talented people, but what they're all after the same thing, and that is to make great music. And it isn't necessarily about I'm trying to make greater music than you. It's a matter of I'm working at trying to make great music. I see that you are too. And that we find that being cooperative and collaborative is perhaps a better way to rise to the top than being competitive and petty. And besides, none of us likes being around petty people anyway. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's a healthy environment to be in. And I think that's great. Well, that pretty much answers all these questions that just popped up for me. Would you please continue talking about Your Number One?
Absolutely. So Your Number One was the last kind of pre-release, pre-album release single that we pushed out. And this is actually another song that I wrote as a part of the Johnny Mercer Songwriters Project. And this is a really fun one because it's very different style-wise in terms of the style of the song is quite different than really anything else I've ever written or written since. Has almost a like salsa-y feel to it. And it's that makes it, I mean, unique right off the bat. It's catchy. It's like, it's not, I wouldn't call the topic of the song happy or fun because it is about a breakup and a bad breakup at that. But because of the style of the music, it is kind of like a bop and people can kind of jam and dance to it, which in terms of the music that I write is not very typical. A lot of the songs I write tend to be more ballads, slower tempoed, and more kind of like lilting folk music. And so this, I think, for me has just been a ton of fun because it is different than what I normally play. And so I almost always play this out, even if my set, even if like I'm playing a writer's round in Nashville and I'm only playing 4 songs out of the hour, I almost always include this one because it's just automatically a crowd pleaser. People have fun listening to it. It's fun to play. It's fun to sing. And at this point I have let go of the actual topic of it. I wrote it about, a past relationship, about an ex of mine. And so it's not necessarily a fun memory, but I think what I love about the song is that, it shows a real sense of resiliency on my part. Because I've written a lot of sad heartbreak songs. I probably could write them forever. I love a good sad song. I love listening to sad songs. I love singing sad songs. But this one is it's a breakup song, but with resilience. You know, the singer of the song, whoever it may be, if it's not me, has finally found like ground to stand on and recognizes that this relationship was bad. It was not good. Things were that like she or he was not treated properly. And as opposed to in the past where maybe excuses were made and they got back together and all of that. Like the singer is finally saying like, no, we're never getting back together. We're not mm-hmm. doing this again. Mm-hmm. And like, that sucks for you because I'm amazing. Basically. And I do think that,
see, I wouldn't want to be. Yeah,
exactly. And so I think for me, it was kind of a turning point in my own emotional process. Because so almost all of the songs that I write are autobiographical. And they're either about my life and my experiences or about my family, or my friends. And when writing Your Number One, it was kind of a shift for me because I had been processing this breakup. I had been processing all of the emotions of this breakup for a long time. And writing is how I process through my life experiences. And I had finally gotten to the point where I was like, this isn't on me anymore. Like, this wasn't my fault. And this, I shouldn't be the one feeling bad about this. And that kind of, yeah, was the turning point for me to bounce out of it. And I think that if you really listen to the lyrics, I think that's why this song has resonated with a lot of people. Like, aside from the fact that it's just a fun listen on surface level, if you're listening to the lyrics, I think a lot of people really can relate to finally finding the strength to make the decision that's right for them and stop making excuses for somebody else. And I think that's why it's resonated a lot.
You know, that very conveniently leads into my next question. It's like, he's just set me up perfectly. and I think maybe in a lot of ways you've already answered the question. And the question was, do you view your songs or the aesthetic purpose of your songs to provide an emotional cleansing for your listeners, you know, say over and above just merely being an observer of human situations and relationships and making commentary?
Yeah. So I think, for me, when I'm writing, I really am almost always writing for myself. Okay. And writing to process through something that I'm feeling or something that I'm going through or something that I'm close to, you know, if a friend mm-hmm. is going through something really difficult and that mm-hmm. is then kind of weighing on me, I write about what's happening to me. And I think that is the reason why a lot of my songs have resonated so well with other people, is because I'm writing from a place of truth and authenticity. And I think that that really shines through in the songs. And there are times when I write about things that are not necessarily like my experience, that are things that I'm either making up in my head or observing. And that's not to say that those songs aren't, that I'm not really, that I don't also love those songs and that those songs don't also resonate with other people. I've just found that when I'm writing, the ones that are really about my life are the ones that land the best with other folks. Because I think when I'm performing them as well, I think people see that it's truthful to me and they see the emotion, and it's not just somebody up there singing a song about something. It's somebody sharing a piece of their heart, and that's a very vulnerable experience. And I think that's really appreciated by audiences, that they feel like, and not just feel like, they are being let in to my life. They are being let into my emotion, to my heart. And I think that's what really lands, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting what you've just brought up. And because I think you're right. I think authenticity is one of the hallmarks, and this is just my opinion, of music that is meaningful. I mean, I can listen to, you know, some of the latest pop hits, which granted are probably intended to be more for dancing or moving rather than any sort of conveying any meaningful message. And of course, it's shallow music. I mean, it functions in a certain way, and then it, but in terms of having some real meat on the bones, so to speak, there is that level of authenticity that I think has to be there. I think we have to somehow, the artist convinces us that they've experienced these emotions. I mean, it's like, again, the idea of Greek tragedy, that you can have the experience of Oedipus's pain without actually having to have the actual pain that Oedipus experiences in the story. And I think there's a lot to that. Now, getting to something to what you're saying about what you make up in your head, I'd like to talk about your creative process for just a moment. What typically inspires you when you write, number one, and what comes first? Is it a lyric, a melodic idea, a rhythmic idea, a set of chord changes on the guitar? Or you have a particular mood, then you got to go, I got to find a way to express this musically. How does it work for you, Charlotte?
But before I dive into that, I just want to—I totally agree with you about. I think that's why a few minutes back I said that I really like sad songs. Like I love listening to sad songs, because I do feel like, yeah, there's you really feel there's the meat on the bones. Like you feel like you're experiencing something, and it's not so surface level as maybe some other music is. And obviously that can happen in songs that are not just sad, but I think the emotion and vulnerability really comes through in those, which is why I love a good sad song. In terms of my creative process, it really does differ. So there are days when I will decide, like, great, I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna pull out my guitar, and we're gonna see what happens. And I'll like strum around and play some chords, and maybe like a little lick will come out of that that I like, or maybe I'll start humming something and something will stick, and it's kind of just all happening together. But there are also, I think more frequently what happens is I will be it almost it ha always happens when I'm either driving or if I'm like in the shower and I'm just totally zoned out. Like I think those are the two places where I'm actually able to not think about other things. Like obviously when I'm driving, I am focusing on the road. Like I'm being a responsible driver. But that's one of the few places where I really am able to clear my mind and not be stressing about like, okay, this email just came in, or somebody just texted me, or this has to happen because I'm driving. Like there's no other option.
I'm only laughing, Charlotte, because I've heard that so many times that people go for a drive in the car, or, but here's a unique one. I have a friend of mine in the Milwaukee area here who's a singer-songwriter, and she says she gets most of her good ideas when she's vacuuming. And she's the only one that's ever said mentioned
That's
about
funny.
vacuuming, but I know what you mean. I need to have a waterproof pen because I always get my ideas when I'm in the shower.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are, I think the vacuuming, like I think it kind of provides a similar experience where like you have something that you're doing, but it doesn't require much thought, you know, like you're kind of doing it on autopilot, and so that allows your mind to wander off to other places. And so I find that, yeah, those are the moments where something will pop into my head, and it'll either be like a lyric or just like an idea. And I'll, since I'm almost always doing something where I can't start writing in that very moment, I will jot it down in like the notes app on my phone. and then I'll come back to it. And so I'll kind of let it ruminate, and I'll think of specific lyrics and specific lines. Maybe it'll stay to just that one idea. And then when I do have a chance to actually sit down with my guitar, I'll go from whatever I started with, and build it up from there. And I think, and it, I would say like about a third of the time it's an idea, a third of the time it's like a specific line, and a third of the time it's like a melody. So I really do think that my process is pretty evenly split between like where I start from. And then I'll kind of build it all together from there. I don't sit down and write all the lyrics first, or sit down and write down all the melody first. Like I do that part in tandem.
Well, it's, you know, I'm intrigued because, and I always ask this question of every composer and singer songwriter, because I'm very intrigued in everyone's creative process. And, you know, and of course there's the gamut runs in, you know, some people wait until their muse spews and it just all comes out at once, you know, and then there are some people who every day will sit down and make themselves write for X amount of time. You know, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, I'm sure, because you've met a lot of other singer-songwriters, but I'm always very intrigued by that whole process. You know, and I was also curious too, in your writing, have you written any songs for other artists?
I have not. I mean, so I've written with other people.
Okay. A lot of people tell me they enjoy co-writes.
Yeah. So I think I probably would say I prefer to write alone, simply because it is such a vulnerable process. Mm-hmm. Since I am writing about my life, it can be, especially with like a new songwriter, like somebody that I just met, it can be really hard to feel like I'm writing at my best if I'm kind of feeling awkward or unable to really share my true experience or true emotion. Mm-hmm. So that has definitely been something I've struggled with in Nashville, because co-writing is a huge way that people network with each other, and mm-hmm. a huge way that people make friends and make community. And co-writing is not, I definitely like doing it from time to time, but it's not something that I want to be doing mm-hmm. all the time. Whereas I know some people who like, they will schedule 3 co-writes a week and they absolutely love it. And that is amazing for them. I do not have that. I do not have that ability. But when I have done, I have a few co-writers in Nashville that I've worked with a few times and I feel comfortable with, and I do love writing with them. And when I write with them, sometimes we'll write a song that is about, you know, something in my life or something in their life. And it's very explicitly like, we're writing this song, but like Charlotte's going to probably perform this out. But there are other times where we're writing something that I know that they will probably be the ones performing it out, or we're writing it like about something specifically in their life that mm-hmm. maybe I would sing it on some occasion, but it's not something that I'm going to really add to my repertoire. Mm-hmm. And so in those experiences, yes, I'm, you know, basically writing with them for them. But I've never written a song explicitly like for somebody, for a totally different person, for a totally different artist that's not also a part of the creative process. Okay,
I see. Well, you know, that's the great thing about music is everyone can have their own way of doing things.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to go back to your most recent album for just a moment and have you talk a little bit about how much of the direction from your production team was taken to build the final product of your songs.
Yeah. It's been a very interesting process with my, so my producer is William Gowley, and with Charlotte Avenue Entertainment. And He has been really great, and he and his wife, who's also his partner at Charlotte Avenue Entertainment, Michelle, they have been absolutely instrumental in helping me grow these last almost 3 years now, in Nashville, and helping me figure out what I'm doing and figure out what next steps to take. They've been just so amazing. But it was interesting because when we started working on Wild Child, I had really just met them. Like we had connected, I think, a little bit before I moved to Nashville, if I'm remembering correctly. But we decided really quickly that like they liked the songs that I was writing, and I liked the style of what they had produced in the past. And we decided really early on, like, great, we'll do three songs. We'll go in and we'll do three songs. And if we like how they're going, like, maybe we'll do more, but we'll start with these three and go from there. And we went into the studio and we started putting down the three. And that same day, we decided, you know what, we're gonna do four more, I think it was, and we'll do seven. And then like 3 weeks later, we were like, okay, you know what? We'll just make it a full album. And so it was a very quick decision that went from three songs to all of a sudden this whole album. And I still didn't actually know them very well. And so through a lot of the process, a lot of the beginning part of the process, I felt every idea that came from Will and Michelle was like in line with what I was in line with what I wanted, just like naturally. Like I didn't really have to say much. I think Will has a really great talent of taking a song that's been written, and understanding like what that means to the artist. And so understanding very easily, very quickly and easily for me that like I'm not a person who all this like wants to overproduce all these songs and make them these big poppy radio ready things. Like I want it to be authentic and raw in a way. And I don't want to mess with it too much because like it's the song that I want people to hear, not the 20-piece band or something like that. And I didn't really have to even say, I don't think I ever said anything like that. I think he just kind of automatically understood. And so with that said, like I do think he shaped a lot of the way the band came into it and then lay down the tracks. But the song itself was the biggest voice in the room. I think they, you know, they listened to the band listened to the song and we played through it live. And maybe I gave a few notes about why I wrote it or what it meant to me. And then they just went with it. And I think a big part of it is also the fact that Michelle and Will work with absolutely incredible musicians who have played for everyone from Olivia Newton-John to Dolly Parton to like they've been in the industry for years and they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly how to get whatever sound they're instructed to get. Like they are so talented that they didn't even really need to be told all that much. That again, the song spoke for itself. And it wasn't until like once we got to like the nitty-gritty of like the mixing and the vocals and the harmonies, all of the vocals and harmonies I did independently with our sound engineer. And so that was, I think, a moment where I was really able to build out what I wanted it to be vocally, which is what I hear the most anyways. You know, I hear the vocal and the way the melodies can flow together with the harmonies. And that was a chance to really be nitty-gritty and be very picky about how I did those. But it's interesting now thinking back on that process and then comparing it. We've already started back in the studio working on a like the next EP. And this process, we're still only, I don't know, I would say 30% of the way into this process. But this process is very different from the way that we did Wild Child, because now I'm so comfortable with them. Like, I've known them now for 3 years, basically. And they know me so well. I know them so well. And I'm also, I think I was a little bit more reserved in sharing my opinion the first time around. So I would share it always, but in a very diplomatic way. And mm-hmm. now I do not do that at all. I'm just like, no, I don't like that. Uh-huh. Or no, that doesn't sound anything like what I want it to sound like. And you know, they know that that's how I actually am now. And so I think this process now is a lot more, collaborative is not the right word, because Wild Child was also very collaborative, but I think we're just so much more comfortable with each other.
Well, you know each other better.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, from what you described to me, it sounds like with Wild Child, it was like jumping into the deep end to learn how to swim.
Yeah.
And it took some time to get to know these folks, but now you know them much better. They know you.
Yeah.
And so the process, and it's interesting to hear you, you know, talk about their expertise. It sounds to me like, that the wisdom of their experience is, let's see, to quote Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to hold them and you got to know when to fold them. I mean, in other words, they knew enough to let you be you. And then at times when they felt like they needed to say something to help.
Absolutely.
But mostly it sounds like they kept their mouth shut unless you were going off the rails.
I mean, they definitely, I think, what I really appreciated right off the bat with Michelle and Will is that they weren't trying to turn the songs into something they weren't. Like, mm-hmm. I've worked with producers in the past that are so amazing and so talented, and I'm still so happy with how the songs turned out, but they definitely went, there was a bigger transformation between the song that is, you know, that was the master that we eventually got to, the master of the song, to if it was just me playing it with my guitar. Whereas mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the songs on Wild Child, if you listen to the album version and then you listen to me doing it, just me, like acoustically, obviously there's a big difference in the fact that I don't have a band and I don't have the backup vocals and whatever, but the song itself, like, it does still sound, it all still sounds the same. It still lives in the same world. It still feels like it's the same and gives the same experience. And so I really appreciated that right off the bat, with Michelle and Will, because I think they have a real talent for, yeah, letting the songs live mm-hmm. as they are and mm-hmm. not doing too much to them, while also finding the nuance, you know, finding the yeah. nuance in the process.
Well, I think people that are real pros in, I mean, whether it's you know, being a good educator, good producer, whatever, you know when to give a little nudge and you know when to just step back. And I think that's, you know, because there's an important distinction, you know, it wouldn't be your song if your producer told you exactly how to do everything.
Exactly.
It'd be yeah. their song with your voice. And that would probably take away from some of the authenticity of the what you're trying to create,
yeah.
you know. Well, with what you've told me, you've wiped out like about three questions I was going to ask later in the interview, but I do want to follow up. So you are working on a new recording now that Wild Child is out. What can you tell us about this new recording, when it might be out? Do you have a tentative name for the title of the EP or any of that?
Well, so we are still very early on in the process. We have 7 songs to kind of make up this EP. for all I know, we'll end up adding three more and make it a full album or
Okay,
something like
okay.
that.
All
You
right.
never know what will happen between now and whenever. But seven songs that have all been, I wrote them all within pretty much the last year, which is very different than Wild Child, because some of the songs on Wild Child I wrote back in like 2018. And so the album really did span a big chunk of my life. Whereas these songs are all fresher, if you will, fresher in my mind, fresher in my experience. And what I love about this collection of songs is, so for a while, and especially before I moved to Nashville, I really struggled to define like what genre I was. And that's a question that I get all the time. It's like, oh, well, what, you know, you're a singer-songwriter, like what genre, like what do you write? And so really struggled, because when you're releasing stuff, when you're pitching your music to playlists or to journalists, like you kind of have to put yourself in some sort of box, or else they don't know where to classify you. Like they don't know how to slot you in. And I really struggled with that, because I feel like my music really spans so many different genres, depending on the song and depending on the mood I'm in when I'm writing, and it really doesn't sit neatly in a little box. And so, especially before I moved to Nashville, I pushed my writing to go in like a more country direction. And so I think with Wild Child, some of the songs are more country leaning than anything I'm writing now. And not in any sort of way that I'm like upset about. Like I love all of the songs on Wild Child. Are like, we picked them because they mean a lot to me. Like every single song on that album is a really vulnerable moment for me about something really significant or difficult in my life. But with all that said, I think that once I got to Nashville and I, one, learned that Americana was a genre, and two, started talking to a lot of other people and realizing that this was a very shared experience, I think that's when I really was like, okay, remember who you're writing for. Like you are writing for, as I said, near the beginning of this interview, like I write for myself, like I write for what I'm going through and not to fit into somebody else's box. And so everything I've written over the last year or so, or year and a half now maybe, has been free of me trying to push myself in one way or another, and it's just whatever comes out. And that's why I'm really excited about the seven songs we've picked, because they are all very, very different from each other. Almost none of them lean country. They're very Americana folk. They're very grounded in that. And they're, man, we've already gone with the band in all for all of them, and the band sounds amazing. And as I mentioned before, because Michelle, Will, and I are so much more familiar with each other, like we went in with like a plan. Like I came in with a list of notes before we even started of like, this is how I want all of these things to sound. Like, these are the artists that I think of when I listen to this. Like, these are the songs that inspired this. And so the band was able to get all of that. And so within just a couple takes, like it was just on the nose. It was like right exactly how we wanted it. And I think that's like, partially because I'm more confident in myself as an artist, partially because I felt so much more prepared for the experience, partially because, you know, we have a longer relationship together now. But I think that really shows in everything so far. And so I don't have a name for what the project will be called yet. I'm hoping that the first song of the bunch will be released next October. So it is a while from now.
Oh, yeah.
I do have things. I have things lined up for the next 9 months, basically. And then I'm hoping that the next, the, or not hoping, that the next 9 months will basically kind of like wrap up Wild Child in a really lovely package. And then we will kick things off in October with the first single of the new bunch, and go
Well, that sounds wonderful and something
from
for us to look forward to in the
there.
fall. That's awesome. Are you going to plan to do any kind of a tour or anything just to help promote Wild Child?
So the next 9 months or so are really, I hope, going to be really exciting. So first of all, in terms of like releases, I don't have any like new songs coming out per se in the next 9 months, but I do this Friday, the first video of this Friday the 12th, January 12th, the first video of something called Live from the Castle will come out. And I'll give a little brief background, but so the Castle is a studio outside of Nashville where I recorded Wild Child, and it's my favorite place to record. It's like unmatched in my opinion in terms of an experience at a studio. Like it's cozy and there's history and there's green space, and it's like everything that I look for when I'm trying to be like the most comfortable in myself and what I'm doing. So we recorded the full album there. And then this past May, or May or June, I decided that I wanted to do an acoustic version of Your Number One because we wanted to do some sort of video for it, but I didn't want to do a full music video. I thought it would be really nice to just do like an acoustic video. And so we just did an acoustic version of the song. And that kind of shifted everything for me because we'd been focusing on the CD tracks of Wild Child for so long, that doing just an acoustic version of Your Number One kind of re-energized me and got me excited all over again about these 10 songs on the album. And so I decided I wanted to do an acoustic version of every single song on the
Oh,
album.
Charlotte Morris Unplugged.
Exactly. So
Okay.
in July of 2023, we went back to the castle and we set aside one day, and me and my friend Camden West, who is also a Nashville-based singer-songwriter, he's really amazing. Look him up. He just released a song this past week. But he and I went in and we recorded acoustic versions of every single album, sorry, every single song on the album, in a very, I mean, I can't technically call it live because obviously we weren't in front of an audience. We were in a studio setting, but we would run through each song once or twice maybe, and then we were sitting across from each other in the same room. Our mics were picking up everything the other person was doing as well, and we would run through each song, recording it top to bottom, like maybe once or twice. And then that was that. Like, we didn't edit the audio. We couldn't patch in to fix a spot that was maybe not perfect. Like, everything is exactly how we sang it and played it. So we did these kind of live acoustic versions of each song. And then we spent the second half of the day filming videos for every single one of the songs. It was a very long day. I'm like kind of getting tired thinking about it, but it was an amazing day. And we created Live from the Castle, and it's every single song off of Wild Child, performed and recorded acoustically. And the first of those videos, it comes out, yeah, Friday, January 12th, and there's nine of them, because obviously we I already released the Your Number One back last summer, kind of to promote the album.
So where will these be released to?
These will be on YouTube.
Oh, they'll be released to YouTube. Yes. Okay. That's good.
YouTube or my social medias. They'll be on my website as well, but
Oh,
YouTube will be
okay.
kind of where they're hosted.
Sure.
And there, I'm really excited. I'm really excited for them because they are, I mean, I think they give a really amazing peek into like what it's like to see me live. Which not everybody gets. I do tour, but I have a lot of listeners in like the Netherlands, and like the UK, and I have yet to go play live over there, but hopefully sometime in the future soon. So this gives a really nice peek into what it's like to see me live, and it gives a really awesome, almost like behind the scenes peek at like my process, because every the audio, like the because of the way we recorded it, it sounds as if I could just be sitting on my couch writing the song itself. You know, there's nothing added to it. There's nothing edited about it. And everything is just really raw and candid almost. And so I'm very excited
That
for
well,
when
I'll
it
tell you,
turns
I'll
out.
be looking for that come Friday. That sounds exciting to really see you performing in that kind of environment. I think that's awesome.
Thank
Well,
you.
in addition, if I were to be able to magically, just show up to Nashville in the next week or two or a few weeks. Are you performing anywhere in and around the Nashville area? I could come hear you perform.
So I'm performing around Nashville a fair bit in the next month. And then I think kind of going back to your original question about touring, I am hoping to be on the road for as much of the year as possible. So I'll be in Kentucky in February. I'll be in the upstate area, so like South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe some parts of Virginia in the spring. I'll be in Maine in the fall, but hoping to slot things in other places as the year goes on. But for the next month here in Nashville, I have quite a few shows coming up. Most of them, actually all of them, are free, which is really lovely. I'll be at the Basement next Tuesday with a full band, which is exciting. And then I'll be at a few other places around town just for acoustic sets. I have one this Thursday, I think. The Basement is next week. I think I have two the following week and maybe one the last week of January, but they're all on my website, on my social
Okay,
media.
good. Well, and just so you know, and as a reminder to my listeners, I do include in my show notes your web address or an actual link to your website and also your Facebook page so that my listeners can follow up and find out where you're going to be performing live, because that would be exciting. And I would also be remiss, Charlotte, if I didn't extend an invitation to you to come to the Upper Midwest. The Milwaukee area has some nice venues for artists such as yourself, and we are also in Milwaukee, host of the largest outdoor music festival in the world, with what's called Summerfest. And
Summerfest. All right, I'll look
Summerfest,
that up.
they have a website and look up. And the thing that's cool about Summerfest is that they will have numerous stages to address all kinds of musicians. So they'll book big name, internationally known artists, and they'll usually put them in the amphitheater. But then they'll have side stages for people who are just more regionally known, or different, and even have stage that one of my acquaintances went, and she said that it was for people who were up and coming. In other words, it's a real nice showcase for music. I don't
Cool.
know. I can't say that it's necessarily the same caliber as like South by Southwest or something like that, because that's specifically a showcase for new artists. But Summerfest will draw over a million people,
Oh my gosh, amazing.
and they have even a special area down on the Lake Michigan lakefront, the Summerfest grounds. And they have a lot of our other summer festivals. Milwaukee's known as the city of festivals because we have different festivals almost every weekend,
Oh my gosh.
of one nature or of another, mostly reflecting the demographic of the Milwaukee area. So we have our German Fest is the largest German festival outside of Germany. We
Wow.
have Festa Italiana, Polish Fest, all those kind, but Summerfest is really a big music. And then there's also some wonderful mid-sized venues that would are I think are excellent. There's a place called Shank Hall. There's also the back room at Collectivo Coffee. I've seen some groups there. It's a wonderful, it's not a huge venue, but it's, you know, I think 300, maybe 250, 300 seats, and a nice venue. So I would invite you to come, come to the Midwest. And for that, I mean, you know, we're not that far from Chicago. In fact, a lot of stuff that comes to Milwaukee, we're piggybacking on people that come into Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, my, that's great to know. I mean, I'll definitely be in Chicago later this year, simply to visit family. My sister lives in Chicago and my grandmother is in Waukegan, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
So I'll definitely be up in the Midwest later this year. So I will be looking into all of what you just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you see, you come to Milwaukee, we're not that far from Madison, Wisconsin, also is a wonderfully musically diverse town. I could very much, after listening to your album, I mean, you could, you would find an audience in Madison, I think. And then we're 5.5 hours to the Twin Cities, and there's lots of wonderful venues up that way.
Yeah.
There's also another one trying to, oh, it's called the Mile of Music Festival, which is in Appleton, Wisconsin.
I've heard of that one. Yeah.
And it's, again, several stages and a way to showcase a lot of different artists. It's like a big variety show. There's, you know, something for everyone. Kind of thing.
Amazing. Well, I will be looking into and trying to play all of those.
Well, I would be remiss as a resident of the state of Wisconsin if I didn't welcome you with open arms and invite you to come. So, because we love music here, and we certainly would love to have you come and perform as well. Well, my goodness, it's hard to believe how long we've been talking. And I've enjoyed every minute of it, but and I try to be pretty thorough in the questions that I ask. But Charlotte, I also know I'm not perfect. So as we wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to add or tell my audience I have not asked you about?
I don't think so. I mean, we really covered a lot. I guess we were talking about Nashville and the numerous talented artists who are here, and everybody's goal is to make some great music. And beyond that, success is defined differently for everybody. Like, some people's success is becoming a huge star. Some people's success is simply making a living off of their music, or, you know, maybe doing a tour, or, you know, everybody has their different levels of what success looks like to them. And I definitely have my levels as well. But the biggest thing that's really important to me and has been really exciting about releasing the album Wild Child is that, because when I write, I am it's me processing my emotion and my experience. My only hope is that somebody else will kind of find some solace in that as well. Growing up, I didn't really know how to express myself until I found songwriting. And so almost always I would turn to other artists. I would turn to music because somebody at some point had written a song that perfectly described whatever it was that I was going through or struggling with, even if I didn't have the words for it myself. And so my biggest goal with my music is to be able to do that for somebody else and to kind of continue that train and pass that on. And so Wild Child has been amazing because I've heard from so many people that, you know, that song was exactly what they needed to hear because of X, Y, and Z. Or I had a woman come up to me at the release concert of my album and let me know that she had just sent the song The Day We Lost You to her mom because her mom had just lost her mom, and it was exactly what she needed to hear. Like, and that's the goal, you know, is to be able to create that space for other people. And so I hope that anybody who's kind of just hearing my music or hearing my story from this from this interview has a chance to take a listen and hopefully something off of the album or maybe even previous releases will be exactly what you need to hear in this moment.
Oh, I think that's, it sums things up beautifully, Charlotte. You know, I think a lot of the lay public, and when I say lay public, I mean people who are not usually, you know, musicians or are into music, they don't understand that we're all not about just out to make tons of money.
Oh, yeah, I make no money.
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, I don't make, you know, I don't make a dime off this podcast, but you know what? I get an uplift that I can't put a price on. Exactly. Because I have the wonderful opportunity to meet people like yourself and to talk about music. And, you know, and I love to do that. And that gives me a really nice boost. And I, you know, I just wish more people would understand that music is not just about making money. Music is one of the most human activities, I think, that we can get involved in. And what you've relayed to me, I've had similar experiences. You know, I've had, you know, I taught college for a number of years and I directed the band at the university and still do in retirement. And I don't know how many times I've had students say, you know, being in band is what helped me get through school, you know? And so like you, you know, your song helping people cope with things. And I think that's the magic and it isn't magical. Magic is hocus pocus. The reality of the power of music.
Yeah.
That's the way I'd like to put it.
Absolutely.
So I am right on in 100% agreement with you. And I listen, I know, I listen to your recordings and we all have similar kinds of experiences. And those are wonderful things to give us that balm, if you will, that we need to kind of put on those emotional sores that we might have. And it helps us feel better.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, Charlotte. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Absolutely.
And I want to wish you nothing but all the best for what I'm sure is going to be a continued successful musical future.
Thank you so much.
You bet. My discovery composer of the week is Peter Schickele. Born in Ames, Iowa in 1935, he recently passed away on January 16, 2024. Schickele studied music with Zigfald Thompson at Swarthmore College, spending the summer of 1954 as a composition pupil of Roy Harris in Pittsburgh, and in 1958 with Mio at the Aspen Music School. He then went to the Juilliard School, where he continued his composition studies with Persichetti and Bergsma. He was awarded a Ford Foundation grant in 1960-61 as composer in residence to the Los Angeles high schools. Then he taught at Juilliard from 1961 to 1965. In 1959, Schickele co-founded the Composer's Circle, which presented concerts of contemporary works. In 1967, he founded a chamber rock jazz trio, Open Window, with which he performed many of his serious works until 1971. His prolific compositions under his own name show a diversity of influences, including jazz, rock, and non-tonal styles. His major works, including four-string quartets and a symphony, are strongly tonal, often structured through contrasts of texture, dynamics, instrumentation, meter, and mood. Schickele's fascination with both Stravinsky and the Everly Brothers is manifested in his eclectic style. For the most part, his works are postmodern in their small forms, neo-romantic in their light impressionistic textures, and neoclassical in their instrumentation. Childhood interests in chamber music, pop, and rock songs
theater, and the slapstick burlesque of songs by Spike Jonze began to be incorporated into his works when he invented P.D.Q. Bach, a persona through whom he lampooned Baroque and classical music and the conventions of musicological writing. Pieces by P.D.Q. Bach involving such contraptions as the left-handed sewer flute and the double reed slide music stand were presented in concerts at Juilliard and Aspen from 1957 and were first given in a public concert at Town Hall, New York, on April 24, 1965. Schicklie has become the leading American musical satirist, giving concerts throughout the United States in which he lectures, sings, conducts, and plays as guest soloist with symphony orchestras or with his own ensemble. The humorous compositions range from outrageous parodies such as the cantata Iphigenia in Brooklyn, to ingenious combinations of antithetical styles such as in Blaugrau, Bluegrass Cantata, and are full of surprising violations of familiar styles, musical forms and phrase structures, harmonic conventions, and orchestration. Schicklie's commentaries and his mock scholarly, the definitive biography of P.D.Q. Bach, 1807 to 1742, published in New York in 1976, juxtapose incongruities from contemporary culture with relatively austere academic and classical canons, and are reflective of the eclectic musical menu of the modern American public. One of the most widely performed and published of contemporary composers working in many different styles, Schicklie has written scores for television, including Sesame Street and a section of Fantasia 2000, and films, songs for musicals, including O Calcutta. His ensemble was the original pit orchestra for the show, and arrangements and songs for Joan Baez, Buffy St. Marie, and other folk revival singers. Through his weekly public radio international program, Schicklie Mix, which won an ASCAP Deems Taylor Award in 1993, he has educated audiences in music fundamentals across a wide spectrum of performing styles and genres. He has been awarded honorary doctorates by Swarthmore in 1980 and North Dakota State University in 1995. His P.D.Q. Bach recordings have won 4 Grammy Awards for Best Comedy Album of the Year between 1989 and 1992. The All Music Guide lists 74 recorded works under Schicklie's nom de plume, P.D.Q. Bach. Under his own name, over 40 of his works have been recorded. In my show notes is a link to a YouTube performance by Peter Schicklie on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, likely sometime in the late 1960s or early 1970s. That puts a wrap on episode number 174. My show notes, along with links to artist websites, recording label websites, YouTube videos of artist performances, are all posted on my Facebook page, The Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. Next week, I'll be interviewing Arizona-based singer-songwriter Annie Moskow. We'll be talking about her new album, Land of Dreams, that will be released on February 2nd, 2024. Other upcoming interviews include Michigan-based singer-songwriter Spencer LaJoy, who also has a new album entitled Shadow Puppets, coming out on February 16th. I'll also be talking with the husband and wife folk duo, The Kennedys. Also, Nashville-based jazz and folk singer Nina DeVitri and New York City-based percussionist and composer Jake Richter. So don't touch that dial and stay tuned. If you have questions, comments, or a suggestion of an artist, composer, or musical style for me to consider, you may email me at hurstc@uwm.edu. So until next time, this is Professor Craig W. Hurst and Carmel the Wonder Dog signing off from the musical universe of Professor Hurst. Have a great day.